Of course, a number of our families who are away from us tonight. It's interesting to stand up and speak and notice where the blank spots are. We have a whole group of our folks who are normally with us who are away tonight. And we're glad to have guests with us. It's really good to have a lot of Travis's family here today. It's good to walk in tonight and find out the reason for all this cold air. Brent and Brenda have brought it from Alaska to be with us. Good to see you guys. It's also good to see Rodney and Sherry and their family, and good to have you guys here with us. And of course, it's good to have people here keeping an eye on Tim and Alice today as well. Good to have the Ewings all home with us too this weekend. I want to think about our work during the coming week with you for a second. Remember, again, the daily Bible reading program. If you haven't picked up your guide for that yet, remember to do so tonight. And join us in the journey through the Lord's Word during this year. That's always a part of our life in this congregation, and part of what we have in common. So we invite you to join us with that. Remember the Harding Chorus performance on the 4th, Thursday night, right? Briley's choral group will be here, and they'll be performing over at the Kickapoo High School Auditorium. We are the host for that. So it's our privilege, and thanks to all of you who are hosting those young people that night in your homes. And remember to come and join us for that occasion. Invite somebody to come along with you. You know, it's a simple way to let people be aware of the beauty of a cappella music. And what an opportunity. So we look forward to that. Remember also the families of our congregation who are passing through griefs right now. We have at least three of our families. Be aware of that and keep those families not only in your prayers but also in your acts of kindness. And that will be much appreciated. I've chosen this question to conclude our journey through Scripture this year, taking note of the great questions that God wants us to be aware of in order to live our lives well, to be really truly human, to enjoy what He wants to bless us with. Who can live at God's house? And let me explain for a moment why we've chosen this passage. Psalm 15 is usually thought of as attached in some way to the occasion when David moved the Ark of the Covenant to the city of David or to Jerusalem and placed it in the tabernacle there until later on Solomon built the temple. It was an occasion filled with awe because of the history of, you remember what happened with the movement of the tabernacle and the wrong way and what the consequences of that were. So the idea of this psalm would be, now what kind of person can be in the presence of God and be at home there? We're told that this little psalm uses the language that was usually attached to the alien foreigner, or the alien sojourner, I would say. Someone who was not an Israelite by birth, but who had traveled there to live there among the people of Israel. And that the picture is of someone coming before the presence of God and being like all of us as humans would be, sojourners, just visiting God's presence. And if that's the idea here, then you can extend the thought for a bit and think about what our hopes and dreams as God's people are. Our intention, our hope, our goal is to live in our Father's house. And while we're here, our gathering together congregationally in God's presence is the thing to which we tune our lives, and it reminds us of who we are. But beyond the here and now, our hope forever is to be at home in God's house. There are so many glimpses of this dream in the scriptures. In Psalm 84, there's the idea, I'd rather be a sparrow nesting in the temple or in the house of God than I would to live 1,000 years somewhere else. Jesus, in John 17, in his great prayer, prayed that he might be given the glory that he had before he took the form that we have and lived among us. And then he prayed for his people to be able to join him in that glory. He told his disciples, I'll come again to receive you to myself, that where I am, you can be also. And he told them, if you remember, that their hearts were not to be troubled, because he'd prepare a place for them in his Father's house. So who is that for? Who can dwell in the presence of God? The little psalm is analyzed, I notice, in a number of different ways. There are some who approach it as if the statement in verse 2 gives the three qualities of the person, and the rest of it describes how that would be positively and negatively in someone's life. Sometimes it's also analyzed based on the things the person does do and then the things the person won't do who is going to be in God's presence. I like to think of it by trying to think of all the parts of a human being. In order to say that someone who will be at home in God's presence is someone who has practiced loving God with his entire being, heart, soul, mind, and strength, it's said in other places. But this little psalm gives us some special glimpses of the person, the kind of person we're talking about. It's interesting that this little psalm doesn't. This morning we talked about what the Lord's done for us and his being the content of our faith. But in this little psalm, it's the response to God's presence in our lives that's the focus. So notice it. I just want to describe it. I hope to do it briefly so we can see the whole picture. Start with the feet of such a person. You can imagine him traversing the hill up to the Mount of God where the Ark of the Covenant, the tabernacle, the temple will be. But what's that for us? He who walks blamelessly. And I mean simply that he goes places that he ought to go. He makes his way of life something which would be honorable before God. He has the beautiful feet that bears blessings from God's people to other people, or from God to other people. This the habit of the person that we're talking about here is a certain way of standing, a certain way of living, and a certain way of going about his life. Sometimes through a year, I keep a little journal or a little daily log of the places I went during the year. There are different purposes for that, but suppose we did it, each of us, with this psalm in view. Where did my feet take me? Where were the places I went? Why did I go there? How did I conduct myself while I was there? That's the part of the picture here. Secondly, think about the person's hands. And of course, we're considering here what he does. The kinds of actions the person takes. It says the person does what is right. Usually the idea of right in the Bible, we think of it simply in moral terms, right or wrong. But usually right means that which gives to both God and man their due. That which gives God the place that he truly has in life and conducts self appropriately before him, and that which treats other people like those made in God's image ought to be. Doing the right thing simply means doing what's appropriate, doing what fits, what should be in life. The two, you notice, go together. Where our feet take us, there are things for our hands to do. There are all kinds of needs that we meet in the places we go in a year of life. There are things that need to be attended to, things that need to be done. There are things that we get to do and things we have the privilege of doing. And all of those things. There are other places like Psalm 24, where the person who stands in God's presence is someone who has clean hands, meaning that he has kept himself pure in what he did. Number three, think about his mouth, his lips, his tongue, what he says, what this kind of a person says. Verse 3 says, at the end of verse 2, he speaks truth in his heart first. It's interesting, isn't it, the way the truth is not just on his tongue, but it's in his heart. He means to leave an impression that's in keeping with who he really is. He means to be honest in the facts of what he says, but also in the motivation behind them and why he is saying what he's saying. He does not slander with his tongue. There is not the slander does to someone's reputation what murder does to his body. There is not the kind of willingness to attack the person of another with the tongue or with the words, with what is spoken or said. And then he does no evil to his neighbor in this way. And I've shorthanded to say that there's nothing unkind or hurtful in the words of the person who's at home in God's presence. He speaks in order to convey grace to those who hear. Like Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 28 and 29 and along in there calls for us to do. This is not calling for a vow of silence. It's encouraging us to use the gift of speech constructively to be a blessing. Think of all of the ways that it could be to convey appreciation or encouragement or instruction or admonition. There are a number of ways in which it could happen, but slander and hurtful words, evil words, have no place in this person's life. What of his ears? He does not take up a reproach against his friend. Now, I realize this part of the statement may be speaking more about the bearing of tales about a friend, the bearing of things, of the story of the things the friend has done that he's ashamed of and he doesn't want to do anymore and he doesn't want said about him. But you can't repeat a reproach about a friend that you haven't listened to already. And if you think about the end of verse 3, and what we are willing to take into our hearts through our ears, there is reason to stop and think. This includes, of course, what we read in print. It's what we pay attention to. It's what gets our antenna up so that we have, someone has our attention. Does it take something bad said about someone else to get us to stop and pay attention? Well, not the kind of person that we're talking about here. His ears want to take in good things about other people. His eyes, verse, and notice the statements made in verse 4, in whose eyes a vile person is despised, but who honors those who fear the Lord. What's this saying to us? Does God want us to despise other people? I think it's talking to us about who we see as our heroes in life, who we see as those worthy of our admiration, who we think belongs on the front of the magazines and on the special stories on the news. Who we think are worthy of our imitation. It may not be some athlete or some entertainer or some political leader or some wealthy individual or anything like that. What this is saying is that I admire and respect other people not because of who they are, but because of who I am. And what I look out and see that I think is worthy of celebration happens because of who I am. And what the verse tells us is that a person who does vile things is not the hero in the story of the life of the person we're describing here. The one who stoops to the lowest level and engages in the most vulgar behavior and speech, and the one who becomes infamous because of the shocking things that he might do, that he might have done, that's not the hero in the life of the person that we're describing here. This is a person who honors reverence that he sees practiced in ordinary, everyday life. If you can see an older person who has great respect for the Lord and for all things holy, there's your hero. If you can see somebody who can be devoted to serving and who can honor God sincerely in his character and his approach to life, there's the one who is admired in the eyes of the person that we're talking about here. We need to, in our culture, we need to be reminded of that sometimes. If you can see a young person who lives by convictions, who has the courage to do what is honorable in the crowd, to be unselfish, there's your hero. That's the one who is worthy of admiration. What about the mind of the person that we're describing in Psalm 15? This is the kind of an individual who can make and keep promises, who considers something about having given one's word or having made a commitment to be sacred. It says here that this is the one who swears to his own hurt and does not change. I've noticed in the commentaries that this is regarded as the most difficult statement in this whole psalm, but I think you can see what it's saying. This is saying that here's an individual who makes a promise, and he didn't know what all was ahead. He made a commitment. He didn't know how it would turn out. Circumstances developed where keeping that promise is going to be inconvenient and difficult and costly and not to one's personal advantage, and yet this is the kind of person who still will keep his promise because he believes that one's word once given is holy, and so he keeps his promise. And then number 7, the heart of this individual. It's sincere and fair. And I take this from the first part of the last verse of the psalm. He does not put out his money at interest. Now, what is that saying? Is it wrong to put your money in a money market account and make 0.5% on it? No, that's not what it's saying. What this is talking about is money lent to a fellow Israelite, in this case, or a brother, as we might say it, who is in deep need. And you give him money as if you're going to be helping him, but you charge him exorbitant interest for it. In other words, if it gets to the place where even the kind thing you do is in order to take from someone else who's your brother in the Lord, then that's not the sincerity that we're talking about here. The motive in the heart in lending to someone else is not to make something for yourself. It's to help someone else. If you have it and you can help the brother, then that's the point. There's sincerity in to generosity. And then notice he says he does not take a bribe against the innocent. If he knows someone is innocent, then no amount of money in the world is going to change that conviction in how he would treat the other person. What is right and fair is not a matter of what is profitable or what gets gain. All right, now look, take a look at that list. The psalm that way. Those things are not great big programmed productions that we're going to have somebody to help us get around to somehow, someday. These are everyday matters of doing and being in the laboratory of life. And when it comes right down to it, faith either has a bearing here or not at all in our lives. Who can live in God's house? This psalm ends by saying, "He who does these things shall never be moved." And I paraphrase it by saying that a person who loves God with his whole being will never be moved. Not temptation, not adversity, changes the kind of person that we've been talking about here into something besides this. And he's at home in the presence of a God, a holy God, who loves him. Let's make that our aim as we launch into a new year. And let's make it our way of examining how we've done in the year that we're about to bid farewell to tonight. Are you somebody who is needing to make the good confession and to be baptized into Christ? Is there something that we can pray about as brothers and sisters? If so, let us know by coming while we stand and sing together.